Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 11, Text Number 15. Dvari, dvari, grihanam, cha, dadi, aksata, falekshubihi, falekshubihi, alankritam, purna, Kumbhair, Balibir, Dupa, Dipakai, Dvari, Dvari, Grihanam cha, Dadi Yakshata Falek Shubihi, Alankritam Purna Kurumbhair, Balibir, Dupa, Dipakai, Dvari dvari grihanam cha dadyakshata falekshubihi alankritam purnakumbhair balibir dupadipakai dvari dvari grihanam cha Dadi akshata falekshubi alankritam purnakumbhair balibir dupadipakai Door of each and every house. Grihanam of all the residential buildings. Cha and Dadhi curd. Akshata unbroken. Fala fruit. Ikshubihi sugar cane. Alankritam decorated. Purnakumbhai, full water pots. Balibihi, along with articles for worship. Dupa, incense. Dipakai, with lamps and candles. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In each and every door of the residential houses, auspicious things like curd, unbroken fruits, sugarcane, and full water pots with articles for worship, incense, and candles were all displayed. Purport. The process of reception, according to Vedic rites, is not at all dry. The reception was made not simply by decorating the roads and streets, as above mentioned, but by worshipping the Lord with requisite ingredients like incense, lamps, flowers, sweets, fruits, and other palatable edibles according to one's capacity. All were offered to the Lord, and the remnants of the foodstuff were distributed amongst the gathering citizens. So it was not like a dry reception of these modern days. Each and every house was ready to receive the Lord in a similar way. And thus, each and every home, house on the roads and streets distributed such remnants of food to the citizens, and therefore the festival was successful. Without distribution of food, no function is complete, and that is the way of Vedic culture. So, this is a description of Lord Krishna's entrance into Dwarka, and Srila Prabhupada has said that it is not like a dry reception of these modern days. Can anyone think in the immediate past of any dry reception which was observed locally?
The cowboy parade.
Yes, the cowboy parade. Of course, the cowboy parades have a long history, not in the sense of Super Bowl history, but in the sense of Hari Bowl history. That means that Lord Krishna is the original cowboy, and he and his playmates used to go on parade every day. Early in the morning, they would set out for the forests to tend the cows, as we can see in this nice painting. And later in the day, when it was very warm, they would take their cows to the Yamuna, as we can see in that painting. And in the evening time, they would again come home on a parade, along taking their cows with them. Krishna was given the tending of the cows by his father because they are part of a cow herding community. This is certainly a very wonderful fact that the Supreme Personality of Godhead chooses to appear and eternally appears and eternally exists within the community of cow herders. As we always note, that the only thing that they know of this in America is the saying, holy cow. The reason that the cow is holy is namo brahmanya devaya go brahmanya hitaya cha. The cow is very dear to the Brahmins, the Vaishnavas, and the cows and Brahmins are very dear to the Lord. Why is the cow so dear? Because she provides so much service. We can judge the dearness of someone by the degree of their service or the spirit of their service, because service is an indication of selfless dedication. Service is not something which is like barter, which is a form of business in which two people exchange things reciprocally and are unwilling to part with whatever they have unless they get something in exchange. But service is something quite different. In service, there is no consideration of something in return. Rather, one is inspired out of a mood of devotion. This is, of course, spiritual devotional service. There are other types of service, just like slavery is a type of service. But a slave did not serve voluntarily. If any slave had been given a choice, of course, some slaves even were so much attached to their masters, they chose not to leave. But generally, slaves would leave. But we don't see that attitude on the part of Krishna's devotees, although sometimes we are called slaves. You know, you people are enslaved by this society, or you're enslaved by your God. But as Prabhupada commented, what is the question of slavery or not being enslaved? Everyone is enslaved. Everyone is forced to serve. And the other day we were studying the issue of free will. And there's a thing called determinism. Determinism means that the laws of nature are governing the universe, and on account of these universal laws, every circumstance is affected. Every circumstance. There's nothing that exists, no situation which occurs, which was not affected by some law of the universe. Even in the Bhagavatam, we see that Prabhupada makes the point that every motion of our body, whether it's the movement of the senses, the organs, the knowledge gathering, acquiring organs, or the active organs, they're controlled by one or more demigods. So when we hear the word laws of nature, Prabhupada immediately says, "Who's the lawmaker?" And nature is under the control, ultimately, of Krishna. Not only of Krishna, but under Krishna, all of the demigods. There's no question about this, that all things are controlled and very difficult to get free. Devi hi ye shagunamayi. Mamamaya dirataya. Mameva ye prapadyante mayamitam tarantite. Prakrite kriyamanani. The prakriti and gunas. The prakriti is shaped into gunas. They're all under the Devi prakriti. They're ultimately under the control of the divine Krishna, as the supreme divine. So, the question of, you know, free will, can you do anything on your own? If everything is controlled by material laws, and all circumstances are affected, and therefore whatever you will to do really is just an outcome of circumstance, then the question is raised, can you be held responsible for what you do? If everything is forced upon you, is it really your fault? This question naturally arises. So I was explaining to one professor that our view is that there's no question of whether there is free will or no free will. The question is not free will or no free will, and the question is not whether we're controlled or not controlled. The question is who is controlling us. That's the actual question which Srila Prabhupada raises. The question is who is going to control you, because one way or the other, you are under somebody's control. Either you will be under the control of Maya, or you will be under the control of Krishna. And there's no way around that. So, when we deal with the Supreme Lord and his activities, however, we're not talking about someone who's under control. Maya dakshena prakrite suyate sacharachanam hetunane nakonte jagatvi parivartate. The material energy, Krishna says, is working under my control. So Krishna is not controlled by any type of laws. Krishna is the supreme lawmaker. And the demigods work under him. And when we see Krishna's activities within his lila, his pastimes, we should not misunderstand that these are, you know, activities which are under the material laws of nature. Because Krishna said, janma karma cha me divyam. Yovam veti tattvataha tekta deham puna janma naiti mameti so arjuna. Anyone who understands my activities will get liberated. Now, if his activities are mundane, then why should they create why should they produce liberation? They don't, if they were mundane. But they do produce liberation because they're transcendental. And what does transcendental mean? Transcendent of the laws of material nature. And we are not, we cannot be. Even the movement of an eyelash is controlled by some demigod. You can't be free. The only question is, who is going to control you? Now we see, Prabhupada gives an example, it's a very nice example, that either you will be controlled by the loving potency or by the angry energy of the Lord. And the metaphor given is a kitten is grasped in the teeth of a cat. When a kitten feels its mother, you know, biting it in the scruff of the neck, it doesn't feel anger, fear, or any such emotion, but love. But that's those same cat's teeth, when they go into the neck of a rat or a mouse, is death personified. So here we have an example of the same teeth. So the same point is being made, that Krishna, like the cat, Krishna's like the cat, or Krishna's energies are like the cat. And if you are a devotee, then the pinch is loving. But if you're not a devotee, then it's death personified. So Prabhupada says that everyone has to accept the existence of God. Some will accept God's existence in a loving way and surrender with devotion. And others will feel, you know, I don't believe in God. I don't believe. But they will have to surrender to God in another form. I am Mrityu Sarvaharas Chaham, all devouring death. But everyone is going to have to accept God's existence. Now, people may think that they're coming to the point where they can not do it. They don't have to accept God's existence. And it's nothing new. There have always been atheists. We know that there are atheists, just like karma amongst the philosophers are to some extent atheistic, and there are others, right? So many different schools of Indian thought, and there were some that are atheistic. And in Western thought, there are atheists. You know, there's like now, people are very proud of the fact that computers are on the verge of being declared as intelligent. And that's a sign, if computers are intelligent, that ultimately the people who made the computers are even more intelligent. And there's a great battle, just like recently, this chess battle between the grand chess wizard, you know, and Deep Blue, the computer named Deep Blue. And, you know, the whole of America and all the international chess buffs were on, you know, standby to see who was going to beat who. And the international chess champion Kasparov was so confident that he said that whoever wins these matches, I think the best of five or something, whoever wins the matches should get all the total prize. Usually they split the prize. He said, he's so confident, he said, whoever wins should just take the prize. Anyway, the fact is that on the first day, I believe it was the first day, he lost a match. It was the first or second game he lost. I think it was the first day he lost a match. The computer beat him. So there's a big discussion about this. Okay, he eventually won more than the computer did, but it was very close. And his associates and assistants said that they never saw him sweat as much as he did. And he was exhausted after each game. You know, and the point being made that the computer didn't get exhausted at all. And usually, you know, Kasparov is famous for winning by, you know, making some dramatic move which unsettles the mind of his opponent. But the computer has no such emotions. So the computer didn't get disturbed at all. He just kept crunching, you know, his crunching his possible moves. You know, he had millions, he has got like 13 brains, the computer, you know, types of programs which are nearly like brains, and they just keep going with millions of possible moves, and it doesn't even know that Kasparov was being dramatic. That didn't affect him at all. It was quite cool. Nobody had to wipe the sweat off the brow of the computer. And Kasparov was getting more and more and more exhausted. Like the computer. So this question comes up, you know, how do we compare a human to a computer? Like humans, they have sense perceptions. But what does a computer have? All he has is inputs. Data comes in. And, you know, human beings have they perform some type of activities as a result, you know. They feed out some data, while computers have outputs. And, you know, human beings have memory. I mean, people may say, you know, a computer is not a live thing. Well, computers have memory. And so, in fact, their memory recall is usually much better than human beings. Well, someone may say, you know, human beings have the capacity for different types of functions, you know, thinking. They can think. Human computer can't think, but human computers do process the information. It appears that they do. And they have programs. The human beings have a capacity for, you know, certain states of consciousness, and not just consciousness, but thinking states. But computers have programs. And ultimately, when it all comes down to it, when you add the things together, some people who are, you know, they're called strong artificial intelligence researchers, they say that we're going to be able to make a computer that is a conscious being. Of course, you know, there are famous computer believers, or that computers are live beings. Like this one man, Searle, who's a very famous person. When he heard, you know, right away with this big chess match, they asked him, what's your opinion, you know, about this computer? And he said, as far as I'm concerned, it's a hunk of junk. And as far as their being, you know, computers being alive is a bunch of baloney. That's what they quoted him as saying. And his opinion is that there's no question about it, that, you know, they are not the same. There's no similarity between a computer and a human being. And even if you make, you know, say you get a computer, and even if they got him to the point where he looks like a human, they could give him some type of human-like skin, a humanoid, you know, but he's not going to be a computer. Why? Because he has no real intelligence. Intelligence. Why? Because what is a computer, he says? By definition, a computer is simply a symbol manipulator. That's all. That's all that a formal symbol manipulator. That's all a computer is. That it can take symbols and manipulate them in a formal way. Syntax, but not semantics. The difference is one is syntax, and the other is semantics. Semantics implies understanding. And a computer does not understand it. He gives a very interesting experiment to prove this point. He says that supposing you put a person in a room all alone, there's nobody else in the room, and you feed this person some symbols which happen to be Chinese. You see? And they just look like a lot of squiggles and squoggles. And there's a person sitting in the room and he has the help of a computer. And the computer, you know, there's a CPU nice program, and there's lots of data filled in with, you know, a lexicon and grammar and rules and context. The computer is capable of processing a language. So what could happen is all these symbols, a person will put into that room a question in Chinese, let's say. And the person will get that thing inside the room. He doesn't know Chinese, doesn't know anything about Chinese, but he feeds these squiggles and squoggles that are the Chinese writing into the computer. The computer processes the whole thing and comes out with an answer. And the answer may be good enough, in fact, and the computer might be developed enough that a real native Chinese speaker could not detect that the person who gave this answer didn't know Chinese. Okay? The computer is so capable of doing... Now the question is, did the person who was in the room acting as the go-between, did he ever learn Chinese? Does he have any idea what Chinese is? No. So Cyril's point is, if he doesn't know anything about Chinese, then how can the computer know anything about Chinese? How can he actually understand the content of what he's saying? If the person has no knowledge, how can that computer that's in the room that's helping him have any knowledge? He says, absolutely not. So human beings are always trying to attempt to, you know, disenfranchise God. We don't need God. God is dead. But actually, they're so foolish that every moment they're dependent on God. Every breath they breathe, you know, is a declaration that God exists. They just don't give any credit to God. Prabhupada says that, you know, they can't even make one blade of grass. If they ever synthesized a blade of grass, it would be the biggest thing in history, right? But there's somebody synthesizing grass all over the place on this planet for the last, you know, billions of years, and nobody even thinks to give any award. They won't give any award, you know. Well, it's just nature. Whose nature, Prabhupada asks? Whose nature is it? So, this problem of, you know, the lack of Krishna consciousness ultimately is also a lack of culture, and it's seen on every level. Just like we said, and in this text today, you know, how they used to receive Krishna. Every day when Krishna would come home from the fields, this ceremony would take place. He would be greeted, very nicely greeted. How? First of all, from the hearts of his devotees. Because when we talk about devotion, as we were saying before, it's not forced or slave enslavement. If you're serving because you're forced to serve, nobody likes that. Imagine if you were eating today, you know, you're going to eat today, and someone is forced to serve you, but they can't stand doing it. Would you want them to serve you prasadam? You'd probably get sick eating that prasadam. You wouldn't want that. Because unless bhakti is there, unless there's some sincerity in devotion, it has no attraction. So the first point is that when Krishna comes home, he's received with so much loving, and it's all shown through the eyes. The love pours out of the eyes of the residents of Braj when they come, when Krishna comes back with his cowherd friends. Now we see, you can say, making a comparison, the same love was shown to, you know, our modern day Texas cowboys, namely the Dallas Cowboys, because they're the only cowboys practically left in Texas. There's a few running around on jeeps, you know, herding cattle, but the biggest cowboys, the most famous cowboys now, are not the ones with the lassos at the rodeo, but the ones on the gridiron. You know, not the ones who use an iron, but the gridiron is the football field. And they made a big reception for their heroes. But anyone who, you know, had the misfortune to turn on the, you know, the boob tube and watch, unless you were even more intelligent and you went to see them in person, has to admit that, as Prabhupada says, it was a dry reception. Dry reception. I mean, at least in New York City, you know, when they greet a hero, they throw confetti, which is really, what is confetti? Old newspapers shredded. I mean, you can just imagine our civilization. All the offices take whatever used paper, no, it's not new paper, any kind of new used paper, and they shred it. And then they have huge garbage cans of the shredded paper. And when the hero goes below, 10, 20 stories below, they take the garbage cans and throw it out the window on his head. And this is the way you receive a hero. I mean, can you imagine what the people of the Vedic times, if they saw this, what would they think is going on? How would they understand this ceremony? Well, whenever our heroes come, whatever leftover garbage we have, we throw it on their heads. This is bizarre. Look at what was offered to Krishna. Flowers were thrown. Flower petals were thrown. Is it? And, you know, incense was wet. What is, you know, what are the smells of New York? Dog stool. The hero has to ride down a street full of dog stool half the time. Or horrible meat, you know, singed flesh restaurants. You know, this is the aromas that waft, you know, into their nostrils. And palatable edibles were offered. What kind of food is offered to Krishna? Horrible, horrible foods were offered to the heroes, not to Krishna, but horrible foods offered to these, you know, football heroes. Right? They probably had a feast after their parade. They brought them in, you know, probably the most unspeakable, unmentionable items were given to them, you know, like they were ravenous, carnivorous, you know, animals, and they were fed flesh, just like in a circus after the tigers perform, right, they heave them hunks of flesh. So these modern-day tigers amongst men, oh, tiger amongst men, you know, here, and then they serve them a bunch of, you know, flesh to eat. And some people say, I want mine raw or rare. That's what they think. These are animals. I mean, what is the difference? Dwi pada pasha, two-legged animals. This is a civilization of animals. It's so greatly different. Cheating civilization. Remember, it's cheating civilization. A whole civilization is cheating because it's presenting itself as very intelligent, very cultured, very sophisticated. And who are you, Hare Krishna people? You're just some kind of, you know, remnants from some past age, some, you know, leftover remnants of a previous civilization, lost, gone, dead civilization, out of touch with reality, living in your temple room that doesn't have windows, so you don't have to see the world, and you can make believe that this is all that exists. This is what their idea is. And what is real? You know, what is real. These are the people who represent us, and the football stars go down and they dump you know, shredded paper on their heads and toss them flesh to eat. This is real. And what you people are doing, sitting, you know, on the floor, you don't even have chairs, and eating with your hands, you don't even have utensils to eat with, and eating a bunch of vegetables, you know, that aren't even enough to give, you know, a pussycat strength. You people are in such a sorry condition. You know, but we're in such a sorry condition, but these people are so bewildered that at any moment, you know, old age, disease, and death will strike them, and they'll be completely confused. Now, what should I do? What should I do? Where am I going? They don't know. They have no way of answering the most basic questions, fundamental questions. Who am I? Where have I come from? And where am I going? What is the purpose of my life? They can't answer any of these questions. Therefore, they're not even humans. Because human life means that you can answer these questions. Who am I? Not just, I'm John Doe, Dodo Bird, John Dodo Bird, because I don't know who I am, or I live on such and such street. Well, actually, you go back even a little bit in history, and people were so much more intelligent. If you see, you study the philosophers today, you know, that a machine is intelligent. Machines are conscious because they can do whatever a conscious living being can do. You go back 100, 200, 300 years, no philosophers even in the West were talking such nonsense. But people have lost their intelligence. They need some artificial intelligence. That's why they need artificial intelligence, because they don't have any of their own. Lucky for them that they have, you know, invented this artificial intelligence. Because otherwise there wouldn't be anything intelligent anymore. So, we are not going to be dependent on this type of machine intelligence. Because if you ask a machine, who are you? You know, what are they going to answer? What's the purpose of life? You know. And you just judge if a machine... No, you know, machine chants Hare Krishna. They can simulate the chanting of Hare Krishna. It won't feel anything. It won't be any better for it or any worse for it. No effect whatsoever. So, we have to absorb ourselves in remembering this Vedic culture. We have to read regularly from the Bhagavatam, see the deities regularly, chant the holy names of the Lord, associate with the devotees of the Lord. Prabhupada said, you know, we have to inoculate ourselves against the onslaught of Maya, the powerful influence of Maya. This whole society that we're living in is very powerful influence. We have to inoculate ourselves against it to protect ourselves from the influence of this deadly civilization. It is a civilization of death. That's all it is. Civilization of death, because the material body is a corpse. And the only thing which has life is the soul within the body. And a civilization which pays no interest or gives no importance to the soul within is a civilization of the dead. And there's no consideration given to the soul. And when it is, it's with the slightest understanding only. You know, what a soul is, what God is. The slightest understanding. Barely. You know, it's like babies. The attempts of present-day religions to try to comprehend God, you know, it sometimes may be somewhat sophisticated, but God is moving further and further away because their behavior, these people's behavior, is sinful by and large. They may be well-intentioned, but the culture, which is part of their religion, is very fallen. And so they don't have such a grasp as could be possible to understand who God actually is and how I can have loving relationships with Him. We are fortunate. Don't misuse, don't take it lightly. It's like I see, I'm always surprised, I said this the other day, that although so many devotees live in this community, very few devotees come to the temple for Mangalarti or to greet the deities. They just let life goes on. I can't understand how you've made such an effort to live here, and it is an effort to live in East Dallas, and you have a temple and you have the ceremonies, but you don't attend. And the less people that attend, the less wonderful are the ceremonies, because naturally the more devotees, the merrier. And so what are you're missing out? No matter how busy you are, just put some time aside. If you don't get your priorities right, you know, what is a little bit of time to be in the temple with your fellow devotees, chanting and dancing a little bit, and hearing class, worshipping the guru? These things are, this is life, this is spiritual life. Otherwise it would be material life. We have to put our priorities, you know, first priority is your spiritual life. Starts there, and everything else comes after that. Not that you can afford to put that as a second priority. So we'll stop here and ask if there are any comments or questions. Yes, Marsh.
In terms of world culture, do you have any experience in other places, even considering India, where there's any culture, you know, spiritual culture, and even like material culture in that sense?
Where there's any spiritual culture left?
Spiritual, or is it manifesting itself like in a more human type thing? Is India completely degraded?
Well, you've been to Manipur. What is it like there? Yeah, I mean, there are places, there are villages in India which still are quite nice. There are temple communities in India which are still very nice.
South Pacific?
Nah.
Africa?
I wouldn't know why. I'm sure there are also communities of other religious traditions. Within their very community, it's probably very nice. But in terms of society, extended society, it's becoming more and more difficult to find a very spiritual culture anyway.
The point of Vidya Maharaj, he said there's almost nobody who has a strict guru cult system as far as he knows anywhere.
Who?
Anywhere.
Very difficult. Yes.
Do you think, with regards to what you're saying about computers, that the man's kind of artificial intelligence is actually his wanting to play God?
Yes, that's my point. It is that human beings want to create a machine. Okay, but then as Prabhupada would say, all right, fair enough. We will agree to give you the title of God when you can make two machines that can have sex and produce a third one. You create a male computer and a female computer and let them produce a baby computer. And then we'll consider seriously your offer of becoming God. And until that time, you're just a hunk of junk. Manufacturers of hunks of junk.
Actually, in terms of what you were saying about the material being dead and spiritual being alive, sometimes people like him trying to invent the idea that computers can someday become as good as or even better than human beings. And actually, it seems to me that that's actually true. And the sense in which it's true is that if you ask a human being who he is, or where he's been, where he's going, or what the purpose of life is, they'll give you answers that are very similar to what a computer might give you.
Yeah, so humans are becoming more and more like computers. And computers are becoming more and more like humans. And neither of them are becoming like devotees of God.
I read an article about this lady professor in MIT. She had a whole team of very brilliant researchers working under her to create a real intelligence in a computer. But after laboring for 10 years, she admitted that actually a computer can never be really intelligent. She admitted that this whole thing is a failure.
Never
really create intelligence in
the. Yeah. Well, Searle's argument is a good one. He says, by very definition, they are formal symbol manipulators. But that in itself, by definition, disqualifies them, because formal means as opposed to with meaning or semantic understanding. So the very definition of what a computer is, it just puts them out of the running for being intelligent. They cannot be conscious or intelligent.
One of his books is titled Artificial Intelligence, The Very Idea.
Yeah, The Very Idea. Any other questions or comments? Yes. Yes, physical impoverishment, not only mental impoverishment, is also going on. Yes, because of artificial food, it's not only artificial intelligence. Everything's becoming artificial. Even the air is becoming artificial. Eventually people may have to walk around with oxygen tanks on their back. Not for going underwater, but just for walking on the street. You'll see people with gas masks and oxygen tanks. They'll have to breathe in special air. The water's already got to be changed. And what else has to be changed? The astronauts go up, and what is their meal? They sit down, they look at three little pills. And that's their meal, three pills. And eventually they'll be able to simulate every aspect of a person's life. Then they can put the person to sleep. Just like there was one person who wrote an article. There was an article about someone who had been... some armed people come into a house and they grab this person while his wife is sitting there. They bind up his wife, tie her up, and they take him away. They're in white coats and they take him away, and she somehow struggles and sees a license plate number, and after about 5 hours... frees herself from the bonds, calls up a friend and says, my husband was just kidnapped. The license plate number is such and such. So the friend goes and searches it out, and it leads to a hospital. And then they go to this hospital. He jumps over the wall. It's a barbed wire hospital, very unusual looking hospital. But he finally gets in, opens a window, and when he looks through the slat in the door, he notices that his friend, who had been kidnapped, is lying on a table. And the top of his head is cut open, and they've taken his brain out and they've put it in a vat, and they've hooked it up with electrodes. And so he just can't believe it. And suddenly the lights go on in the room he's in, and all of these medics are staring behind him, looking at him as if they're, he can just starts to think, well, I'm going to be the next. And they immediately grab him, pin him down to a table, and strap him down. And then suddenly he hears the voice of someone he recognizes, and it turns out to be his secretary from his office, who always had it in for him anyway. And she looks at him and she says to him, what are you worried about? I bet you think you're going to be the next one. She said, you don't have to worry. There's no chance of that, because we already took your brain out 3 months ago. And then they let him go, and he never reports it to anyone, because he's always wondering, am I a brain in a vat, or am I, what's going on? Because the brain in a vat, they simulated all the, actions. She told him that right now your friend Harry thinks he's shaving and then he's going to go to work, but actually it's just a brain in a vat. We've put all this in a computer. So everything can be simulated, supposedly, to the point where, you can just be a brain in a vat. Now, the point is that, this is only a consideration, but the fact is that this is the madness at which, science is going, you can say. They're trying to understand. But the purpose of all of their understanding is not to understand Krishna, and that is a defect. There's nothing wrong with scientific investigation. I mean, within limits, short of cutting people's brains open. There's nothing wrong with scientific investigation, but what is the purpose? Not to improve. They don't know what the goal of life is. Natevitu swarta katimi Vishnun. If you don't know that the goal of life is to realize Krishna, Vishnu, then all of your scientific experimentation is for the wrong purpose. Putting the money in the wrong bank account, in other words. Working, 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 depositing, 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 finally going to get your withdrawal and they tell you, sorry, you have no bank balance, sir. I've been depositing for 10 years. Well, something's wrong. Then they look and said, oh my God, I put the money in the wrong bank account. So that's the problem. All of this experimentation, where is it leading to? To them becoming God? Instead of being a servant of God, they want to become God. The whole thing is in the wrong way. Now, why don't they experiment how to make this a perfect civilization? That Prabhupada wanted. He was not against science. He said science should be harnessed for the use of serving Krishna. We are not against scientific advancement, but it should be used for the proper purpose, just like this microphone or jet planes or cars. We use them in Krishna's service. We're not against scientific advancement, but it should be to further the real goal of life, which is to know who I am and who God is. All right, last comment.
Take that a little further and state how perhaps computers are being used for Krishna service, or how in the future.
Yeah, they are being used for Krishna service, but they're also being used to destroy Krishna service. So the point is that computers, you know, are not good, and computers are not bad. You know, good and bad refer to human beings' actions, not to animals and not to computers. So the problem is that human beings have become toys that can kill you in the hands of demons is not a very good proposal. It's not a very bright future. Well, we have run out of time, but there will be other Saturdays. It is getting late. I think we'll stop here. Sri Sri Radha Kalajanji Ki. Sri Sri Radha Govinda Ki. Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Devi Ki. Sri Sri Gornitai Ki. Srila Prabhupada Ki. Gaur Bhaktivinoda Ki. Gaur Premanandi.